swing of the century for George Springer and the Toronto Blue Jays. Down 3-1 last night in the bottom of the seventh in Game 7, winner take all of the ALCS with the trip to the World Series on the line. Mariners were 8 outs away from going to their first ever World Series in franchise history. Blue Jays were 8 outs away from suffering heartbreak in a roller coaster series that went back and forth. And then George Springer delivers the biggest moment for a Blue Jay player since Joe Carter's walk-off 1993 Game 6 three-run home run bomb to win the World Series. And he uncorks a three-run home run of his own, and the Blue Jays close it out from there on out. They beat the Mariners 4-3, and they will meet the Dodgers in the World Series. We did the entire first hour on that. We are still mixing in your phone calls if you want to weigh in on it. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Last hour was about the two Monday Night Football games last night. Jahmyr Gibbs' career night of 218 scrimmage yards and 2 touchdowns lead the Lions to a 24-9 inspirational win over Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers. Another just horrible injury to Mike Evans in the loss for Tampa Bay. Broken collarbone and a concussion, most likely done for the rest of the regular season. There is a chance he could come back for the postseason. At least that was according to head coach Todd Bowles and the reporting on it. But the Lions bounce back. It's now 51 straight games without losing 2 games in a row. They have won 5 straight games on Monday Night Football, and the Lions, big, big response. And from a team that has so many injuries in the secondary, you wouldn't know it with the way those guys played last night. And then I took the Texans to task, and I still have more comments that I want to get to. Just a pathetic showing all around from that offense as they lose to the Seahawks 27-19. And that scoreboard, that final score, does not do it justice how much of a one-sided game this was for Seattle. Because Sam Darnold, as many good throws as he made, he threw an interception, he got a strip sack in the end zone on a touchdown, on a defensive touchdown for the Texans, on a ball that he never should have been holding on to. But the Seahawks dominate that game. Their defense is legit. They're 5-2. They look like they're a playoff team. Mike McDonald is a hell of a head coach, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the top 5 receiver in football. So those are the cliff notes there in case you missed those conversations. And we will continue, like I said, to take your phone calls on all 3 of those games at 888-710-4476. But something I didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday on a jam-packed Monday show was the firing of Billy Napier by Florida. And athletic director Scott Strickland deciding to pull the plug even after a win. Even after a win for the Florida Gators, but an ugly win where they barely held on. They tried to collapse. And an error-strewn game with bad penalties and just, once again, putrid offensive execution. They barely hang on to beat Mississippi State, who is one of the worst power conference teams in the country. And they probably should have lost if not for the interception with 21 seconds left with Mississippi State approaching field goal range. You thought it was going to be another gut-wrenching loss. And Scott Strickland said, I'm not watching any more of this. I refuse to watch any more of this. A team that is just underutilized, a team that does not meet their potential year after year. When you had Anthony Richardson as your quarterback, and now you have DJ Lagway, and you're not getting the most out of him, you're not getting the most out of the players. And so 3.5 years in, Billy Napier is gone after a 22-23 record as the head coach of the Florida Gators. It looks like it's going to be 3 losing seasons out of 4, and they did not get a winning season in the SEC in his 4 years there. So, Billy Napier gone, even after a win on Saturday night. And look, I mean, all the reasons I just gave you. Yeah, great talent at the quarterback position over the last couple of years. Not able to get the most out of it. Really bad play calling. Really bad discipline. Terrible tackling. A defense, which, by the way, is great. And yet they make mistakes. It's just a team that does not play together. It's a team that never looks prepared. It's a head coach that finds a way to lose games that they should always be winning. And it just felt like he saved his job so many times because he should have been fired last year. And yet he continued to save his job. It was all right. You know, he's on the hot seat, right? It's like 99 out of 100. He's about to be fired. And then they pull off a win that saves his job. I mean, it happened when they beat Texas a couple of weeks ago, even though Arch Manning had been brutal and that defense won them that game. And then he turns around and gets blown out by Texas A&M. They were non-competitive in the loss to LSU, non-competitive in the loss to Miami. Anytime they played a big opponent, they never won. Or it felt like they never won. Remember last year, they're 4-5. They had not beaten a ranked team. They were 0-4 last year, blown out by Miami, lose to Tennessee in OT in a game they should have won, lose convincingly to Georgia, blown out by Texas. They're 4-5. It's like, all right, Billy Napier is gone. They let him finish the season. He beats LSU. He beats Ole Miss, who was top 10 at the time, beats Florida State by 20, which at the end of that season last year, Florida State was in shambles. And so, all right, he saves his job. And then this year, again, never should have been brought back. Should have been fired after the loss to... Should have been fired after the loss to Miami. Saves his job against Texas. Then gets blown out by Texas A&M and barely escapes Mississippi State. But then going into the bye week, that was the biggest reason. I don't know what you can still salvage out of this season. Maybe you become bowl eligible if you find a way to win three more games. Even that seems incredibly unlikely. But it was just about enough was enough for AD Scott Strickland. And I think going into the bye week was the best time to then say, we need a new decision. We need a new voice. We need to start looking for options now and start pitching our... you know, start making our pitch to whoever's going to be the next head coach of this team. And we got 2 weeks before they're going to play Georgia. And then they still have to play number 8 Ole Miss, number 17 Tennessee. And then the two winnable games on their schedule is Kentucky and Florida State. But it was enough is enough. You know, again, Billy Napier deciding to not give up the play calling over the last year and a half. That does him in, right? And it's just... uncreative offense, not taking advantage, not putting your best players in positions to get the ball and succeed. I mean, he was just getting booed relentlessly off the field over the last couple of weeks. You know, they sprint off the field after they win, and Billy Napier couldn't get to the locker room fast enough. It was boos raining down upon him at home in the swamp. And I feel bad. I mean, I feel for Billy Napier. But, you know, you get paid millions and millions of dollars, and you're a college football coach for one of the most prestigious programs in the last 30 years, and he's got every right to be criticized. Right? Nothing personal about Billy Napier or the man that he is or the family that he has, but he's just not cut out for this job. He is a coach that can take a small school and make them great. And that's exactly what he did with Louisiana, with the Raging Cajuns, where they finish inside the top 20 in the final poll at the end of 2020 and 2021. And they were one of the best non-power conference schools, if not the best non-power conference school in the country. And then he got the big job, and he just wasn't cut out from it, really, from the start. And Florida tried to give him every resource to win. Yeah, he did a good job in recruiting. Had a lot of talent on this team. But just not a winning coach. Not a winning coach for a big school. And so Florida owes him about $21 million. Half of that buyout due within 30 days. And the rest is going to be spread over 3 annual installments beginning next summer. And the Gators, by the way, they're still paying Dan Mullen. And they're going to be paying 3 head coaches for the second time in 7 years once they hire his replacement. They did the same thing with Will Muschamp, Jim McElwain, and Mullen in 2018. So Florida has been searching for a long time to get their next great head coach. And for Billy Napier, he's got options available at his disposal. I don't know. You know, you can't you can't rationalize a team like Penn State giving him the head coaching job. Like, he's got to go back to a smaller conference school, or maybe he takes over one of the struggling SEC teams, or maybe he takes over one of the struggling Big Ten teams. Even that feels like a long shot. It feels like he's got to go back a couple of steps to a smaller school and prove that he can win, prove that he has learned from all the bad clock management, the bad play calling down the stretch, his team's inevitably collapsing, and just the week-to-week inconsistency. Now, because like I said, he does have some good wins on his schedule, beating LSU, beating Ole Miss last year, beating Texas this year, but it felt like it was always followed up with disappointment. And anytime Florida really needed to rise to the occasion, it felt like they never did. And a lot of those wins, it felt like already came after the season was lost. And like I said, last year they were 4-5. They rip off those four straight wins to end the season. This year they were 1-3 when they beat Texas. It was too little, too late. Too little, too late. And again, ultimately, maybe it's an unfair high bar for whoever's going to coach in the swamp. But the bar is to win championships. And for me to put Billy Napier and Florida and championships in the same sentence, that would be a joke. It would be a joke to my profession. It would be a joke to reality. It was delusional. Delusional to think he could ever even come close to winning a national championship. Scott Strickland added, by the way, when he spoke about relieving Billy Napier of his duties, that the two had long conversations about whether he should have given up play calling going into this season, and he decided to continue to call plays, and they are number 90 in the country in total offense. And so there you go. You know, you have a conversation with your boss. Hey, you know, you got a lot on your plate right now. Maybe you should think about giving this up. And you say, no, I want to continue doing that. I want to continue doing the extra stuff because it makes me more money. Okay, but you're struggling with it. Yeah, but don't worry, I'm going to figure it out. I'm calling the plays. I'm the head coach. It's my decision. It's my ego. And it got in the way. And so this probably happened too late. This probably should have happened at the end of last season and not that foolish four-game winning streak at the end of last year, saving his job. It should have happened at the end of 2023, if we're being honest. But look, Billy Napier's got $21 million to have a vacation now for the next couple of months if he wants it, or he can try to find a new job. But for Florida, you know, the candidates here, I know a lot of people think Lane Kiffin would leave in a heartbeat to go join the Florida Gators. That's a guy that knows the SEC. I mean, he's coaching in it right now. It's a guy that knows the SEC. Does Lane Kiffin want to continue to reside in Oxford versus living in Gainesville with all the pipeline resources and recruiting and NIL money that Florida has? It's definitely more than Ole Miss. I mean, every team in the SEC, every school in the SEC has got gobs of money, but Florida's got more resources than Ole Miss. If you're Scott Strickland, do you then turn around and fire one underperforming coach and hire another? Do they hire James Franklin? I can't see that happening. You know, you look at the job that Eli Drinkwitz has done in Missouri. Do you hire him? Do you hire, you know who I want? Because I've been screaming for this guy to get a big-time job, and I know folks in Atlanta aren't going to be happy about this. And I know he says that he loves it there, which coach doesn't before they leave? Brent Key. Brent Key, who's got Georgia Tech unbeaten and number 7 in the country. I think he's got to be the sexiest hire and top of the list of any team looking for a head coach right now. Whether you're Penn State, if Matt Rhule doesn't leave Nebraska, whether you are Florida, who just fired Billy Napier, Brent Key has got to be feeling like he can have almost any job he wants that is open this offseason. And so, again, I don't want to see anybody fail. Anybody that doesn't That doesn't give me or college football fans a reason to want them to fail. You know, because like I said, personally, Billy Napier seems like a great guy. Just one that was in over his head really from the get-go of getting this job. I hope he gets a another job this offseason and he succeeds. But I mean, he's just got a lot of things. If he's gonna bring it to whatever his next job is, whatever school he then gets employed by next, he's got a lot of things to fix as a head coach of a program. He's got the recruiting and the transfer portal stuff down, but the game plan preparation, the play calling, it leaves a ton to be desired. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. All right, let's get to the recapping of the weekly picks competition between yours truly and our buddy Zach Gelb, host of the Zach Gelb Show here on the Infinity Sports Network, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, 12 to 3 p.m. Pacific. We got a steak dinner, well, a very nice dinner. Me and Pete the Body have a steak dinner on the line for our reality fantasy competition. Me and Gelb, what Zach described at the beginning of the football season as a very nice dinner, not just a steak dinner, a very nice dinner on the line. And I'm sure he's going to run me up a nice giant bill if things continue to go the way they have. Because I actually did pretty damn well this week. I went 2-1, but I did not make up any ground because Zach also went 2-1. And so I had the Browns. We do three picks against the spread every week. I had the Browns minus 2.5. I was supremely confident that the Browns defense would make life a living hell for Tua. Browns minus 2.5 was a winner. I had the Chargers minus 1.5. I was betting on the Daniel Jones regression, and it did not come. Chargers defense couldn't stop a nosebleed, and so the Colts, they covered the Chargers minus 1.5. That was a loss. And then I had Lions minus 6 last night on Monday Night Football. They win by 15. So a 2-1 week for me, but Zach also went 2-1. He was shaking his Patriots pom-poms all week. They blow out the Titans. Zach did have the Commanders minus 1.5. They got crushed by the Cowboys, and Jaden Daniels left that game with an injury. So that was a loss, but then he had the Seahawks minus 3.5 last night, and that was a win. So 2-1 for me, 2-1 for Zach, and he still, through 7 weeks, holds a 4-game lead. So there is the update on Boyle versus Gelb, which you can hear those picks every Friday morning in the final hour of the show between yours truly and Zach Gelb. All right, let's get to your phone calls here, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Ivan's in Toronto, next up on the Pat Boyle Show. What's going on, Ivan?
What's up, Pat? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, brother. Not as good as
let's
I'm guessing you're doing.
Blue Jays. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And I have to say something I got to say this one thing. The Mariners lose. Let me tell you how good that feels, brother.
It doesn't hit the same way when you're able to troll the Yankees, but yeah.
It does. It doesn't have a good ring, the same ring to it. I give you that. Ortiz, Big Poppy made that one, and, you know, but I had to say it, man. I had to say it. Sorry, Seattle. I know you're going to be sleepless for a long time.
There you go. The play on words. Very good, Ivan.
Sleepless in Seattle, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was right there. You're feeling excited. You get a Julio Rodriguez home run. You get a big dumper home run. It's 3-1, and I don't know if Mariners fans knew it, you know, thought it at the time, but when Dan Wilson brought in Bizzardo, and I'm like, he's not bringing in Munoz right here, and then it's just instant pain when Springer uncorks that home run. Oh man, that's something I'm sure Mariners fans are never going to get out of their head. That moment.
You know what it is? I think Schneider said it the best. You know, everybody criticized them when they threw in Brandon Little.
Yeah, Little in the game five.
Same situation, and all of a sudden, you look back, you're like, at the end of the day, it's a chess match right to the end. Who you bring in, how you bring them in, when you bring them in, you trust each and every player on your squad, no matter what. You got to this point for a reason. At the end of the day, you know, Mariners fans, you have nothing to be sour about. Truly, you guys played amazing. You guys had quite the team.
Yeah. Well, hey, Ivan, what do you think? Your Blue Jays, how confident are you feeling against the Dodgers?
gonna be tough, man. Dude, these are the Dodgers. I love Shohei. Like, Jesus, this guy hit 3 home runs and struck out 10 guys in one game. That's insane. That's unheard of. Like, he's gonna be a handful, but we also got a lot. And you know what? It's gonna be nice to see Teoscar back. It's gonna be nice to see him because he was one of our beloved Jays.
Yeah. Speaking of seeing guys back, I mean,
oh man,
how about Bo Bichette coming back now for the World Series?
I can't wait, man.
I saw I think it was AJ Pierzynski said that I don't know if there's enough room on this roster for Bo Bichette. I thought that was ludicrous. But on it, like when you actually think about it, Andre Jimenez has been phenomenal. So do you just like no second thoughts about it? Do you put Bo Bichette in the lineup for Game 1 if he's good to go?
I would say no. I would let him in. I want to see how he plays out first. Keep the guy going. Like, I'll be honest with you, and I don't know if you're on with me on this. Santander, I was not happy to see him back. I love the guy. I think he's a great baseball player. But he wasn't there all year. He wasn't the guy that grinded it out throughout the year. It was everybody else. And when he came into the lineup, it kind of really, I don't know, like just for me, he wasn't that guy. He wasn't that guy that, you know, in the beginning of the season when we were down under 500, you know, and when he finally left, and I hate to say he got hurt, but things turned around. I don't know what it was, and any Blue Jay fan out there would know. I had a better feeling when he wasn't in that lineup anymore.
Like, yeah, and I
he just wasn't that spark. He didn't. I don't know. Something about him is not like I said, he's a great baseball player. He is what he is. But I'd rather have had Loperfido in there. I don't know. Like I'd rather have Clement. I'd rather have somebody else, but him in that lineup.
Yeah. Look, Ivan, I appreciate the call, bro. He's got a bad back. And, you know, he tried to play through it. And that's why he was scratched from game 2. And then they try to put him in there in game 3. And he had to get removed from that game as well. And you know, he's got a bad back. So next year could be a completely different story for him. But I don't think he was healthy for most of the last couple of months. And he tried to give it everything he had. And it just wasn't enough. You know, sometimes you can't will your way through back pain or a back injury. But look, I mean, when you talk about the left side of this infield here, you know, it would be one thing if Ernie Clement hadn't been hitting the cover off the ball the entire postseason. But then you have Andrés Giménez, who had some of the biggest hits in this series, and it's, okay, you know, where is Bichette playing? I mean, again, I guess you could move Giménez over to second and start him over IKF. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and you could have Bichette play as normal shortstop. You could move Giménez to second and have Clement play third. I'm not leaving Bo Bichette out of the lineup. I know he's going to be rusty, but that's a guy that's, you know, you got to trust the talent. You got to trust one of the best hitters on your team and still an elite talent in baseball. That's just me. NBA kicks off tonight with a couple of games. You got the Houston Rockets now with Kevin Durant. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, they will raise the banner for their NBA championship, coming off a 68-win season and beating the Pacers in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So KD and this Rockets team that is still young, still incredibly intense on defense. They got Ime Udoka as the head coach going up against the defending champions. And then in the late game, by the way, the one big piece of injury news for that Rockets-Thunder game, remember Fred VanVleet tore his ACL in preseason and likely to be out the entire season. So just when you thought that there was going to be an incredible amount of promise for Houston, their starting point guard now most likely on the shelf for the entire year. So that one was definitely a big, painful moment about a month ago when that happened. And then you've got the late game, the Warriors at the Lakers. No LeBron James, in case you live under a rock. He's got sciatica on his right side. He's eyeing a mid-November return. So he's probably going to be out about a month to start the year. And this is a Warriors team that had A lot of big controversial contract talks in the offseason with Jonathan Kuminga after I thought Steve Kerr completely mishandled him in the postseason. He does re-sign, but the way that the contract was done is that they can basically rip it up in the offseason and he can enter free agency, or they can re-sign him again. But Steph Curry, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green, and Al Horford, the newest member of this squad, going to go to the Crypt tonight to take on Luka, and DeAndre Ayton, the newest member of the Lakers. And that should be a good game. No LeBron's going to, you know, take the star power out of it a little bit.
Luka.
Yeah, that's right. Two Western Conference teams, I should say, going at it tonight to open up the season. And just a couple of, you know, futures predictions for me. Feel like we can get these on paper here. I'll give you MVP. I'll give you Rookie of the Year. I'll give you Most Improved Player, Coach of the Year, and Defensive Player of the Year. And I'll give you both conference winners, and I'll give you a title winner. And you can hold me to these if you like. I mean, I'm putting them on paper for a reason. So in terms of the awards, MVP, I think Luka Doncic is going to have his best chance to win his MVP.
Luka.
Yeah, you might be hearing that every night on the Pat Boyle Show from John Ireland. 42 for Luka.
Luka.
Who just, it literally sounds like if Dr. Evil was then put into the Lakers radio broadcast booth. And so we had a lot of fun with that in the postseason. And after
$100 billion.
We had a lot of fun with that last year after that mind-numbing trade. Nico Harrison sending Luka to the Lakers. And look, I think with LeBron out to start the year, plus I think there is going to be a lot of load management for LeBron this year. It's year 23. And if he suffers another injury, I mean, look, he is going to take it as long as he can to come back from any little bumps and bruises and pulls that he might get this year. I would be shocked if LeBron ends up playing more than 50 games this year. I mean, he's already going to miss probably the first 13, 14 of the season. So that puts him at a max of like 68. And then just with load management, missing a game or two here, a game or two there, just off of this injury alone, at max, he's probably playing 60 games. If he gets one more injury where he's got to miss 2 weeks, I mean, again, he might play half the games this year. So you got Luka with the rest of this team. He's got better chance to do damage and put up an average of triple-double and put up 35 points per game than he did in any season with Dallas. And yeah, the fact that it's the first full season with the Lakers, and if Luka's able to stay healthy, I think he's got good odds to win this award. He's the third highest on the list, and this is all according to DraftKings, DraftKings Sportsbook. Jokic the favorite, SGA number two, Luka number three, plus 380. I think that's a decent bet considering the LeBron factor. Rookie of the Year, Cooper Flagg is an overwhelming favorite. I would not suggest, if you're going to put a couple of bucks down before the NBA season begins, a couple of futures bets, I would not suggest betting Cooper Flagg. Minus 170 is just ridiculous. I think I love Con Knipple. I'm a massive fan of him. I thought he was great. I thought he's got a game that translates really, really well to the NBA from what he did in college at Duke. And you look at this Charlotte Hornets team, you know, again, it's all about LaMelo Ball, but he's another guy that's been constantly injured. And so, you know, if LaMelo Ball goes down, all that offense is probably going to run through Con Knipple, and I think the opportunities that he's going to get in general, I could see him having a huge rookie season. And again, I know LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller right now are the number two, the top two options on that team. But I think Con Knipple, if you think anybody outside of Cooper Flagg is going to win it, I think Con Knipple plus 1,500 could absolutely win Rookie of the Year. Most Improved, again, just based off the injuries we know with the Celtics, Jason Tatum almost certainly going to miss the entire year. I think Peyton Pritchard at plus 2,800 with how good he was last year, and now he's going to have a bigger role this year. Most Improved, the numbers that he could put up without Jason Tatum, I think Peyton Pritchard also good odds to win that. Defensive Player of the Year, you know, Wemby is minus 175, just ridiculous odds. So if you want to bet anybody outside of that, I think Chet Holmgren, who's got the second highest odds at plus 650, is a good bet. Or Dyson Daniels, who just got a fresh contract extension yesterday for Atlanta and is maybe the best on-ball defender in the NBA already. Dyson Daniels plus 2,200, I think, would be a good bet as well. But if it's not going to be Victor Wembanyama, I think it could be Chet Holmgren. And then Coach of the Year, Mitch Johnson, the new Spurs full-time coach, plus 1,400. San Antonio could have a big, big rise up this year. They make the playoffs. They get a top six seed in the West. I think he's going to win Coach of the Year. And then finally, to win the West, I mean, how can I pick anybody else but the Thunder? How can I pick anybody else but the Thunder at plus 165? I know it's boring, but I said after they won the finals last year, this team could be the start of a dynasty. Every single one of their best players is locked up for the future. They got basically the same team from last year. Unless injuries strike this team, there's no team that's going to beat them in a best of seven. They overcame all of their inexperience issues in this postseason. And now they've got a title under their belt. You know, I know you could say a title hangover, but I mean, this team is young. They're one of the youngest teams in the entire league. So, Thunder to win the West at plus 165. And yes, I'm taking my Knicks plus 275 because there's no Jason Tatum. There's no Tyrese Halliburton. The Cavaliers are frauds every April and May. And I know the Magic are on the rise. I know the Hawks could have a really sneaky good team this year. And I know the Pistons are on the rise. I don't want to hear about the 76ers. They are a bunch of losers until proven otherwise. That entire city is full of loser fans and a loser team and a loser star with Joel Embiid and a loser coach. Losers. That's who the 76ers are. And so the Knicks are the best option. Hiring Mike Brown, I thought, was the best thing they did. You know, considering all the candidates, I mean, you know me. You know, I wanted them really to get rid of Tom Thibodeau, and I love Tibbs and everything he did for the Knicks, but it was time for a change. And so Mike Brown, I thought, was a great candidate when they hired him. What he did with Sacramento, the amount of the lack of stalling and the lack of just pounding the rock into the floor that this offense just relegated to every postseason is now going to be gone. Knicks to win the East at plus 275. And yes, because I'm a Knicks fan, I'm going to say they're going to beat the Thunder. But really, you should expect a Thunder repeat this year. 888-710-4476, phone number to join the show. We'll get back to your phone calls when we come back here on the Pat Boyle Show and Boyle's Best Bites. This is the Infinity Sports Network. This is the Pat Boyle Show update. Here is Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Mom Pat, a Game 7 classic as George Springer, a go-ahead three-run blast in the seventh, lifted the Blue Jays by the Mariners 4-3. Toronto's bullpen, 5 1/3 scoreless innings, capped by Jeff Hoffman, who struck out the side in the ninth. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., your MVP, hit .385 with three home runs. First World Series appearance for Toronto since 1993.
I've said it before, besides my wife and kids, this is what I pour my life into. So to be leading the team that's going back to the World Series for the first time in 32 years kind of hits me a little bit. And I couldn't be happier for every single guy on the team.
That's manager John Schneider as game one against the Dodgers comes up on Friday night in Toronto. Angels and Albert Pujols have broken off talks of him becoming their next manager. Pujols still said to have options, though, reportedly said to speak with the Padres, while the Orioles also said to be interested in speaking to him as well. A couple of Monday Night Football games, Seahawks finished off the Texans 27-19 despite turning it over four times. Sam Darnold threw for 211 and a score as Zach Charbonnet added a couple of touchdowns on the ground. Meanwhile, the Lions able to get right back on track at home.
From right to left, at the 22, shot comes up, hand off to Gibbs up the middle, the 25, the 30, a foot race to the 40, and the numbers the 50, far side 40, foot race with Winfield, far side 30, 20, 10, sideline 5, touchdown! The Lions have scored on a touchdown run by Jahmyr Gibbs, streaking for 78 yards!
78 yards from Jahmyr Gibbs as he ran for a .136 and two scores in all. Lions raced the Bucks 24-9. Kevin Harlan with the call, Westwood won. Jared Goff threw for 241 and a touchdown, while Baker Mayfield, 228 yards passing, one touchdown, one pick. Both teams now 5-2. Tampa also lost Mike Evans, though, for a large portion of the regular season after he broke his collarbone. Elsewhere, Brandon Graham is back, 37-year-old, going to unretire, return to the Eagles for a 16th season. Titans release veteran wide receiver Tyler Lockett. Broncos linebacker Dre Greenlaw suspended one game by the NFL. Unsportsmanlike conduct towards an official after the game was over against the Giants Sunday. In hockey, Golden Knights too much for the Hurricanes, 4-1. Jets handle the Flames, 2-1. Montreal double the Sabres, 4-2. Wild 3, Rangers 1, and the Flyers erase the Kraken, 5-2. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is JR from the JR Sport Brief. Get all your sports talk here on the Infinity Sports Network. Always available on the free Odyssey app.
Luca.
The best sound from the day in sports. It's Boyle's Best Bites.
Welcome back to the Pat Boyle Show here on the Infinity Sports Network. Boyle's Best Bites is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. All right, we start with Kevin Durant getting ready to suit up with the Houston Rockets here on opening night against the defending champion Oklahoma City Thunder. That kicks off opening night tonight, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. And here is Durant being locked down in Houston long term.
Yeah, it means a lot. I mean, it's NBA is a crazy place, you know, but to have a contract solidified with a team that, you know, both sides wanted this to happen, and feels like a good partnership. So looking forward to keep building with the team and see where we go from here. You know, I'm excited.
Yeah, so Kevin Durant just a couple of days ago signs a two-year, $90 million extension with the Rockets. It's going to be $43.2 million this year, and then next season is a player option for $46.7 million. So it's an average annual of $45 million. But knowing Kevin Durant, that player option next year, if things go wrong with the Rockets this season, a.k.a. if they don't make the, I don't know, Western Conference Finals, he'll probably leave again and seek the next team to try to ring chase with and jump on another young, promising core and ruin that, just like he ruined Phoenix and he ruined the Nets. He's a great offensive scorer. He's one of the greatest offensive scorers in the history of the sport, but he offers little defensively at this point in his career. He made some stupid comment a couple of days ago about, you know, you can't expect guys to bend their knees and defend like it's about who can score. I mean, literally, look at the way the Thunder just won the championship. Look at any title-winning team over the last 10, 15 years and for all of the history of the sport. I don't care how much it's changed. Defense wins championships. I mean, you're not going to find a team that isn't like top 10 in defense that wins the title every year. So I'm so sick of KD. I'm so sick of him. I'll never, ever get over his cowardly move to leave the Thunder after being up 3-1 against the Warriors and not being able to close them out. And then he jumps ship to join a dynasty of a team in the Warriors, the team he couldn't beat, just so he could win his rings and win his finals MVPs. And so, again, 2 years, $90 million, and your guess is as good as anybody. My guess is as good as anybody if Kevin Durant will actually be in Houston again next year. Let's move on. Here is Jaylen Brown. You had Tom Thibodeau spotted at Celtics practice after being fired by the Knicks. Here is Jaylen Brown on seeing Tibbs at Celtics practice.
I had Tibbs here at our practice and explaining some of the things that he saw to help them beat us. Only helps me get better, only helps us get better. So I value that. Shout out to Tibbs for being here today.
Yeah, he showed up to Celtics practice yesterday and offered the team advice. I mean, look, I could be mad at that as much as I want as a Knicks fan. The Knicks fired him. He can do whatever the hell he wants. He can do whatever he damn pleases. He wants to help the Celtics try to knock the Knicks out of the playoffs this year with no Jason Tatum. Be my guest, Tibbs, because you know what? Your coaching advice in the postseason probably doesn't carry too much weight because you haven't been able to win jack squat in the postseason. So go ahead, help the Celtics all you want, pal. Let's move on. Here is Mike McDaniel, Dolphins head coach, still has his job and announcing it will be Tua Tagovailoa starting next week at quarterback.
Yeah, he's going to take the snaps this week and he's going to be our starter this week. And my expectation is that we don't throw 10 picks.
Nice. My expectation is that we don't throw 10 picks. Maybe three. Maybe we have another three like Tua did on Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. Look, I mean, I wonder if those are the conversations now that Mike McDaniel is having with owner Stephen Ross. Like, hey, am I going to be fired here? Because, like, I'll try to make a quarterback change to try to spark things if that's what it feels like. You got to tell me how hot my seat is right now, right? Like, that's always a... Like, is that the conversations Mike McDaniel is having? I think it's fair to ask that. Like, what are the conversations for a coach that is on the hot seat when they're about to be fired, should have been fired already, and they're not, and your quarterback's playing terribly, and you had all that, you had that awful press conference after the game 2 weeks ago where he throws the team under the bus and has to walk it back and to apologize. Mike McDaniel is bumbling, stumbling over his words after every game. He doesn't know what the hell to say because there is nothing to say other than that they're a disaster. And so, like, if Stephen Ross says, hey, one more bad result and you're gone, like, is he going to go down with the ship? Is he going down with Tua? Or does he go to Quinn Ewers or Zach Wilson? I just, they're so bad. And their schedule coming up is doing them no help. They go to play Atlanta Sunday, then a short week Thursday to play the Ravens after that, then the Bills, then the Commanders. Right, good luck. It'll be a miracle if he holds on to his job for another couple of weeks. Let's go to Brian Daboll, Giants head coach. Is he considering a coaching staff change?
No, I'm not considering that. But we all got to do a better job. Starts with me. And there's plenty of opportunities to finish that game the way we wanted to, and we didn't get the job done.
Yeah, I'm just disgusted that they're still employing Shane Bowen as the defensive coordinator. It's as simple as that. He plays prevent defense in two games this year, and your defense collapses against the Cowboys back in week two, and then what we saw against the Denver Broncos. You should be not only considering a coaching change, you should have made a coaching change. Brutal. Brutal. Because the Giants should have won that game going away. And there should be the talk about how exciting this team is with Jaxson Dart and Cam Scataboo making things happen in that pass rush. And yet they blow that game on Sunday and they're 2-5. And it feels like now shot of making the playoffs is all but gone. And they've got a defense coordinator that is an absolute stiff. And they're still employing him. For what reason? I have no idea. Brian Daboll, by the way, who couldn't take Wink Martindale being an alpha in the locker room and being on his coaching staff, so basically fired him, but he's going to employ Shane Bowen, who has no idea what he's doing. That makes sense. It is the Pat Boyle Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Get back to your phone calls when we come back, and we'll reset a historic night in sports. George Springer sends the Blue Jays to the World Series in a couple of Monday Night Football games. Don't go anywhere.